and spoken about over breakfasts and between rounds at billiards, as if one's soul were a common property, a cause. He watched as she blew her nose, fumbling with her thin fingers to tuck the handkerchief away. This was not exhaustion, merely. This was a grief of a different kind. She seemed not so much harassed as halved.
"Never mind," Anna said at last when she had regained control. "Never mind me."
"If I could just take a look at a piece of it," Pritchard said.
"What?"
"The resin. I'll buy it back from you. I'm not going to swap it out. You can give me just a piece, you know. You don't have to give up the whole lump." She shook her head, and in the sharpness of the movement, Pritchard caught what was different about her. He strode forward, covering the space between them in three quick strides, and grabbed her sleeve. "Where is it?" he said. "Where's the tar?" She pulled free of him.
"I ate it," she said. "I ate the last of it last night, if you must know."
"You didn't. You couldn't have." Pritchard followed her and turned her by the shoulders so she faced him. He placed the pad of his thumb on her chin and tilted her head back to better see her eyes. "You're lying," he said. "You're dry."
"I ate it," Anna repeated.
She shook herself free. "Did you give it back to Sook? Did he take it back?"
"I ate it, same as ever."
"Come off it, Anne, don't be a liar."
"I'm not a liar."
"You ate a lump of poisoned tar and your eyes are clear as dawn?" She narrowed her eyes.
"Who's to say it was poisoned?"
"Even if it wasn't,
you know that it was poisoned. You're sure?"
"I don't know a damned thing about this damned business, and I don't like your tone," Pritchard snapped. "I just want a piece of it back so I can look at it, for heaven's sake." She was roused again.
"And who poisoned it, Joe? Who tried to kill me? What's your guess?"
Pritchard waved his arm. "Ah, Sook, maybe."
"Accuse the man who's accusing you,"
she laughed.
"That's a guilty man's game."
"I'm trying to help you," Pritchard said furiously. "I'm trying to help."
"There's nothing to help," Anna cried. "No one to help. For the last time, there was no suicide, Joseph, and no bloody poison."
"Then explain to me why you ended up half dead in the middle of the Christchurch Road."
"I can't explain it."
For the first time that day, Pritchard saw real emotion on her face. Fear. Fury. "You took a pipe that night, same as usual.
And every day since I made bail."
"Today?"
"No. I had the last of it last night, I told you."
"What time last night?"
"Late. Midnight, maybe."
Pritchard wanted to spit. "Don't call me a fool. I've seen you when you're under, and I've seen you coming up. Right now, you're sober as a nun." Her face crumpled.
"If you don't believe me, go away."
"I won't. I won't go."
"Damn you, Joe Pritchard!"
"Damn you!" She burst into tears again. Pritchard turned away.
Where would she keep it?
He strode to the armoire, opened it, and began rifling through the contents. Her empty dresses hanging from the rail. Her petticoats. Her bloomers, most of them tattered and stained. Handkerchiefs, shawls, stays, stockings. Her button boots. There was nothing. He moved to the dresser, where a spirit lamp sat upon a cracked china plate. This would be her opium lamp. And beside it, a wadded pair of gloves, a comb, a pincushion, an opened package of soap, sundry jars of cream and powder. These items he picked up and then replaced, roughly. He meant to turn the whole room over.
"What are you doing?"
Anna said. "You're hiding it, only you won't tell me why."
"Those are my things."
He laughed. "Keepsakes, are they? Precious mementos? Antiques?" He wrenched the drawer from her dresser and upended it over the floor. A cascade of trinkets rattled out. Coins, wooden spools of thread, ribbons, covered buttons, a pair of dressmaker's shears, three rolling champagne corks, a man's shaving brush, she must have stolen that from somewhere, matches, stays, the ticket from her passage to New Zealand, wads of cloth, a silver-backed looking-glass. Pritchard raked the pile. There was Anna's pipe, and there ought to be a little box to match it. or perhaps a little pouch, inside of which her resin would be folded in a square of waxed paper, like toffee purchased from a store. He cursed.
"You're a beast," Anna said. "You're detestable."
He ignored her and picked up the pipe. It was of Chinese making, fashioned from bamboo and about as long as Pritchard's forearm. The bowl of the pipe sat some 3 inches away from its end. It protruded like a doorknob and was fixed to the wood by means of a metal saddle. Pritchard weighed the thing in his hands, holding it as a flautist holds a flute. He sniffed it. There was a dark residue around the rim of the bowl, so someone had partaken of the pipe, and recently.
"Happy?" she said.
"Watch your lip. Where's the needle?"
"There."
She pointed at a square of cloth among the sorry detritus on the floor, through which was pushed a long hatpin, stained black at the tip. Pritchard sniffed this also. He then inserted the hatpin into the aperture of the bowl and rolled the tip about.
"You're going to break it."
"Be doing you a favour, then." Pritchard deplored Anna's craving for the drug. But why? He himself had taken opium many times. He had taken it in Canyere, in fact, with our Souk, in the tiny hut that Souk had hung with oriental fabrics, to still the air so that his precious lamps would not flicker in a draught. At last Pritchard tossed the pipe aside, but carelessly, so that the bowl struck the floorboards, and rang out.
"Beast!"
Anna said again. "I'm a beast, am I?" He lunged for her, not really intending to hurt her, but merely to grab her by the shoulders and shake her until she told him the truth. But he was clumsy, and she wrenched away, and for the third time that afternoon, Pritchard's nostrils were filled with the rich, briny smell of the ocean, and, impossibly, the metallic taste of cold, as if a wind had slapped him in the face, as if a sail had snapped above him, as if a storm was in the air. He faltered.
"Get back," she said.
She was holding her hands before her face, her fingers half curled into fists.
"I mean it, Joseph. I won't be called a liar. Get back and get out."
"I'll call you a liar if you damned well lie.
Get back.
Tell me where you've hidden it."
"Get back."
"Not until you tell me where it is," he shouted.
"Tell me, you useless bloody whore."
He lunged for her again in desperation. He saw her eyes flash, and in the next moment she'd reached into her breast and withdrawn a muff pistol, the single-loading kind. It was a slip of a piece, hardly longer than Pritchard's finger, but from a distance of 2 paces it could shatter his